You're listening to the Clear Creek Resources Podcast from Clear Creek Community Church, located in the Bay Area of Houston.
Welcome, everyone, to the podcast of Clear Creek Resources. My name is Ted Ruskuski, and I'm on the technical arts staff, and I'm part of the story team here at Clear Creek. Our hope is that this podcast helps us to better connect with you, the people of Clear Creek, and continue the conversation beyond our weekly worship services. With me today is Eric and Glenna Harding. Eric serves as the worship leader at our West Campus, where they attend with their seven kids. In this week's episode entitled, You Can't Go Back, So Go On, we're going to hear their two-part story of adoption. All right, Eric and Glenna, thank you. Welcome. Thank you for joining me as we sit down here and I get to drink a cup of coffee and talk a little bit about your guys' foster adoption story. You know, I know every story is unique when it comes to foster and adoption, so I've heard, but I know each story kind of has a start. And so I'd like to kind of go back there. Maybe Glenna, tell me a little bit about, as you go back to the very beginning and you think about your guys' story, how did it all start? I mean, was fostering and adoption, was that always something that was a part of your guys' relationship from the beginning when you got married, or?
No. No, I mean, I had went on a mission trip. Well, we got married young, so.
Well, you were.
I was young, my senior year, and I went to China, and we worked in the orphanages, and I knew then it would, like, hit me that I would want to adopt one day. And I love children, and so, but we were dating, and I think I went home and I like mentioned it, and you were like, You're like, I don't think of adoption. I mean, why would you adopt?
I was at that point just trying to get you to not break up with me ever. Yeah. So well, I was just like, sure.
But you were really like, why would you adopt? Like, you know, unless we can't have kids.
It definitely was nowhere on my radar. I mean, kids weren't on my radar at that point. But I mean, of course, I think your mindset's always been you're a nurturer. And so you're always kind of like, well, you're already thinking three steps down the road. I'm literally thinking lunch.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was like, I wanted all these babies. So I'm going to, you know. Yeah. So that, my heart, and like I said, we were young. So that was my senior year in high school. And we got married, like,
days later.
A year later. But when we got married, we never really talked about our family planning. We didn't talk about children or how many or, you know, anything like that. And so it was probably something always like I would think about or like, oh, that's going to be so cool. I want to adopt one day. But
it wasn't like a regular part of our conversation ever.
Not at all.
So then how did it come up? What was the first instance that you guys together maybe started thinking, maybe God's stirring our heart to consider or explore this?
We never did. It was a actual situation. Do you want to tell it or me?
Yeah. Well, so Jasper, who was in our youngest, our fourth biological kid, when he was a month old, he had kidney reflux and we didn't know. So he ends up in Texas Children for like 10 days. And when you're in the NICU, you're sharing a pod screen with another baby. And so every morning they would come by and just, you'd hear like, oh, hear like the details of this other kid that he's sharing this thing with. And it's basically, it's a CPS case. No one's coming for this kid. And literally the day before this, I'd been standing in the food court at the hospital. And I don't know how we got talking about like fostering and adoption or something, but somebody asked me, they're like, what do you think y'all ever adopt? And I was like, you know, I think if the right situation came along that I would feel like it was the right thing, which is the no answer. And then the next day, I think that it really hits you like
in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So for Jasper, like we were in the NICU, but I was nursing him still, and so I stayed at the Ronald McDonald House like overnight, and so like one of them in the middle of the night feedings, like I was just sitting there and like all the nurses, because most of the babies in the NICU are a lot of them are just really premature, and so mamas aren't always there, you know, nurses take care of them, so I was sitting there and. And the nurses are like gathered around. It was really funny. And it just kind of came up that this little baby was basically didn't have a family. He was in CPS care. And, you know, this is probably against all the HIPAA privacy rules, but like one of the nurses was our student at Sagemont, like an old student at Sagemont. So I had her number and everything like that. So after I was like, okay, so, you know, is this baby like, you know, and she was like, yeah, he's in the foster care system. So I was like, oh, so I went back that night and I was like, we are here for a reason. And it is to adopt this child. And so I went back to the room that night and Eric was staying and I'm like, you know, waking Eric up and I'm like, oh my gosh, Eric, you know, that baby, like, you know, and I'm like, I think that we need to adopt him. And Eric was like, I thought I was going to freak out, but you weren't, like, you had like tears in your eyes and you're like, I've been thinking the same thing.
I really had, like, I really truly, like, I was like, oh my gosh, what is going
and
on?
And then it felt like, ugh, like, oh my gosh, like, so we started pursuing it big time.
Because that's the big turning point. It's like it when you're like, point. Okay, we have our bio kids and like we're on this. But I think that was the moment when God was like, he kind of flipped a switch in both of us. And it's like, that's such a weird thing because that changes your entire family. That's going to change your family mm-hmm. dynamic forever when you do that. And so I think that there was that moment of like excitement and then fear at the same time.
Well, because, yeah, there's a face to it, too. So after that, the days after, I would just, like, look at him, you know, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, like, could this be my child, you know? Mm-hmm. And
so you were kind of immediately, like, pushed into the deep end. What was some of, like, the process? Like, what happened? Yeah. What did you guys go through? How did you, you know, get certified, get in the system? How did that all end up working out?
Well, the shorter version of that, because, well, you hear just if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, so you go, you find a kid you want, and then you say, I want that kid.
You pick them, sure.
Yeah, no. So not at all like that. I mean,
we didn't even end up getting this little boy.
No.
FYI.
And so this was like in July. Mm-hmm. It was in July. And then, so this, typically that process to get certified and all, I can go through it, because you have to take classes. They do a home study. They come to your home and, like, you know, they ask you a million questions and all that kind of stuff. And we fast tracked that. I mean, we started like every day we're getting something done. Whereas usually it'll take like 3 months because we were like, we want that kid. And, you know, so we were kind of like bent on, we're going to do this. And so we did a 3 months worth of work in probably like a month.
Well, and what's crazy again, like, I think, like looking back of like, this is exactly what God had planned for our life because it's been really refining. And part of like my like sanctification, I think, is looking at all like how God had, I hate all those like really like Christian-y words, but you know, like orchestrated the whole thing.
Yeah.
But like, so years before this, I had a friend that reached out to me from my hometown who worked for a foster adopt agency, and he wanted me to take some pictures because he knew I was a photographer, but we never talked really. And so that literally clicked in my mind from years ago. And so, and I never went and took the pictures because I was busy. So I was like, Eric, I think I know someone who works for an agency. And it was our friend Scott. And literally I found his number or maybe Facebooked him or something. And he really helped us like get the fast track started. And so that was what was kind of also crazy because I didn't really know where to go. I was going to maybe just go through CPS and,
right.
And I'm so glad we didn't do that, which is good if you do, but it would have been.
You guys were running hard. You're trying to knock all this stuff out, but you still don't get that boy that you were thinking like, man, this is who God's called us to be. We're going to do all this stuff. So talk about that. What was that like kind of wrestling with that?
Yeah, that was hard because I mean, we looked back, I was like, oh, I'm going to get all this work done and we're going to get this baby.
The word is naive.
Yeah, we were naive. Yeah. And we also had a lot of issues telling our family, and that's a whole other story and another trial, I guess you would say, like that was really hard that we did not expect, but
what was so hard about that?
We have a close knit extended family, and because we already had four kids, so four kids is that's the major leagues. I mean, that's a bunch of kids, and so they were just kind of, and they live close enough, so they were always just kind of a part of our lives, you know. And so while we had this shift in our heart of feeling called to do this, I mean, they're just like, they just wanted their grandkids like they had them. And it was easy, not easy, but relatively easy. And so they're like that. They don't want this kind of a shift, you know, because it wasn't what their heart was called to do. And so while we are our family, they're still a part of it. So I think that was a big shift for them. And that, and this is something that through this whole, 3-year process, they came on board at different levels, different times.
The little boy we were, it was also the first thought for us for race, like, because the little boy was African-American. And that was hard for my dad, not because he's racist, but because he was just, and looking back too, I'm like, yeah, that was actually really wise on my dad's part too, because I think, again, I was naive, like, oh, it's just going to be fine. Like, you're just going to bring in a you know, African-American child and we're just going to love them. And there's going to be, you know, it's going to be fine. No one's racist these days, you know, or like all these things that was so naive and dumb. But my dad had a really hard time. How will y'all do this? Like his their culture and mix, you know, he was worried about that. And looking now that we do have African-American children, I think about it all the time. Not like, oh, I don't, but I want to respect their culture. I want to, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's heavy, there's making sure there's a lot. I want them to know.
So
anyway, but there was all these things kind of, yeah, hitting us where it was like, whoa, I haven't thought about any of this. I just, you know,
we're just like running through a field of daisies, like we're going to rescue children.
Yeah,
just,
which is not
again, naive as a thread for this whole thing.
Yeah. So then.
So that doesn't work out.
It doesn't.
So where do you guys find yourself after that?
We got licensed and we got it all done. Scott was awesome. He came to our house like almost every day, every weekend to get us, you know, licensed. But we did not get the little boy. He ended up, you know, he was from Nacogdoches, so he ended up going to family or foster family in that county.
Which was great.
Wonderful, yeah.
Yeah. And ultimately, that's all we were like, okay, we wanted him to be. We're like, we're in it for him. And he was fine. Like, he got put in some extended family, I think is what the deal was. And so that's good. So probably 2 weeks after we found out he's been placed, I remember it was a Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. And so Jasper is like 5 months old at this point, I think. 5 or 6 months old. And I'm at a rehearsal on a Wednesday. And Glenn is like, so we got a call about they need to do an emergency placement for a baby girl. And I'm like, okay, cool. Again, we have no idea what any of this means. We're just like, sure. And I come home from rehearsal like at 11 o'clock at night. And there's a baby in the room with a, like, there's another baby in like the bassinet by our bed. I was like, I woke Glenn up. I was like, what is that? She's like, that's the baby that they said they needed. I'm like, what does that mean? So then the next morning we wake up and this is January, early January, just the new year.
Well, and middle of the night.
Yeah.
Too.
And they
crazy.
Just drop them off like a trash bag full of their stuff, a car seat.
It was a small blue duffel bag. I'll never forget.
Yeah.
It was like a small blue duffel bag.
That's
baby,
everything in the world they own.
A baby. And like, they did not stay long. I signed some paperwork. But even in the middle of the night too, I remember because this is where we got our placement for we got Eliza, and who's now our daughter, but that's like a whole other story, but which we can talk about. But anyway, she had terrible, terrible ass reflux. Do you remember that?
Yes.
So like, it's like, not yes, only Eric's like, oh, there's a baby. Then we go to sleep. I, you know, fed her, whatever, we go to sleep. And then, you know, middle of the night starts and she is crying and fussy. And I mean, literally we thought she had a problem. Like, we were like, she's sick. She's got like a bug or something. She could not stop spitting up is the nice way to say she was.
Yeah. So for the next 360.
Yeah. She would. And we looked at each other like, oh my gosh, like what is going on? Like it was so surreal.
Yeah. So we called the next day. I called the agency and I'm all like, okay, so what's the story? This is, you know, cool. We made it through the night. We're like, cool, we did it. Made it through the night. And this is January. And they're like, well, okay, so we're working on getting her reunified with her mom. We should know something by June. Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's like 6 months from now. Like, I was thinking like maybe 2 weeks tops. But we went from having one baby to like literally basically having twins. They're both in diapers, both bottles, you know. Great. And one has this, you know, like she's not sleeping ever.
She never
And it
slept.
Was, we were, mm-hmm. it was insane. So we like quick, I mean, you know, you're like, again, there's the idea of being a foster parent. And then when the reality starts there, that's even then just the beginning of here we go. I mean, it was just a lot, like going fast.
And so at what point does that kind of settle down and things start to be like, you know, does June like come and go and you're like, okay, where is this headed? Is this going to be maybe long term? Like, no. When does it change from, hey, we just are going to maybe have this child for a couple weeks to now a couple months to at some point, like maybe we're going to adopt her and this is going to be her forever home?
I think once I called, we talked to CPS and we realized, okay, this is going to be a longer thing. Again, naive here. Like I instantly fell in love, which is fine. Cause it's I feel like a lot of the things and when you hear foster to adopt stories are very similar. And could also like come off cliche. Like it's like you say, like, I mean, but it's true though. Like you don't love these children any less, even if you know that they might leave, like you do. Like, and so for me, like I full on loved her instantly. Like she was my own. I got very, very attached. But looking back, I would do things differently because I fell real hard thinking instantly, she is going to be mine. Like we are going to adopt her and she's going to be mine. And I'll go through all the steps and I'll do what they say and I'll love on her family and her mama. And I really did. But still in the back of my mind, it was like, oh, she's not leaving. And that was a real big problem. So for having Eliza come in and taking care of her and taking care of two babies, basically, that wasn't hard for me. Mm-hmm. It was fine because I loved taking care of, you know, the babies. And so instantly the normalcy of like having two children in my, like two babies and going was fine. But it was the emotional side of the whole case and what foster adopt is. That was what really was really hard. Well, so
when you decide that you're going to foster, you basically take the doors off of your home,
right?
Because they have right to show up whenever, at whatever time, unannounced. And there's this whole list of things that have got to be the way that they're supposed to be. And if they're not, like they can just, then they just decide that moment, pack up that kid, they're gone. I mean, there's just so, it's so crazy. And so we were under, a CPS worker is like the entry-level position for a social worker. And they're very typically way overstacked with work. They've got way too many cases to keep track of. And they're very usually new to just the whole idea of what's going on. And they have like a lot of authority. And so we got someone. We're going to leave out her name.
Yeah,
we have to. We want to say it. We're going to leave out her name, but wow. I mean, she just, for something about how we were over-loving the kid was a problem for her. And then hindsight, we kind of know a little bit more. But she just kind of, we were experiencing like a lot of like way out of the box, not okay treatment and things like that. I don't know how much of that to go into. But
no, well, what was that like when you're fostering someone and you have someone from the state who's the liaison and managing that case for you guys. And that puts a lot of pressure on you. I mean, what was that like?
It was very hard. And like I said, I think I could look back and I could handle things differently. Cause I have a lot of friends who the CPS worker is the nature of, you have surprise visits. They're in your home. They see everything. You have to keep log. I mean, like that's the nature of foster care. But I have some friends who I look now and I'm like, oh, I should have handled it a little like they did. But my personality, I'm just not like that. And so, you know, it stressed me out. I mean, it stressed me out. Everything I would, I mean, I was so worried always that something bad would happen because of something I did. And now looking back, that was not the case. I think our CPS worker was very, very difficult. And, but it was so hard that that was the toughest thing. Like, so worried that my house wasn't clean enough, or I loved her too much, or I said the wrong thing. And it was just a constant, I just felt like,
yeah, for those who don't know, like what does that mean when it's like the CPS, where it's she was difficult or she was hard?
Well, maybe a flyover of just like an overall. So when you foster a kid, there's several people involved. You have a court. That judge is going to be the one who ultimately decides if the kid is going to try to be reunified with family because they're going through some type of treatment plan or steps to be able to get their kid back in their home, which ultimately that's, if it can be a healthy situation, that's everyone's goal. Everyone wants that. Other avenue is in the child has an attorney, attorney ad litem, who's basically their attorney. And then there's the foster family who has a case worker, CPS worker. So that's for the kid. And then also, CASA, who is like basically the child's advocate, sometimes can be working here too with you. And so, so that's kind of all the players involved. And so they, so that CPS worker was the one who just like, for some reason she literally had it out for us from the beginning. And we know now that she had an alternate plan for what she wanted for Eliza from the very beginning. There was some extended family out in New Jersey that she had basically been in contact with. The judge didn't know, the attorney ad litem didn't know, CASA didn't know. And so she had been kind of talking to them. I think it kind of basically promised them, I'm going to get you this baby to you. Cause Eliza's mom wasn't getting it done. She was failing. She was flunking out of rehab. Just everything, every mark you're supposed to meet, she was failing horribly. So I think it became real clear early on that Eliza was not going to go to her mom. So we see this and this worker sees this. So she's now going, I'm going to send her to New Jersey. We're going. She has no one. We've got to fight for her. And that is where the tension, that's where the tension came from.
Yeah, if, that makes sense.
Because she didn't know. If she had told us, okay, the plan is for her to go to New Jersey and be like, cool, what's their address? We'll start calling them. You know, we'll drive up there. We'll start beginning a relationship because she assumed things about us that weren't true. And we assumed things about her because we didn't have all the information. But a lot of times she doesn't have to give us that information, but it created such a problem.
That's what I was going to say. So one thing that is difficult is as a foster family, and it has not changed since we started 7 years ago. It's still the same because I have a lot of friends who are still in the, you know, take care of foster kids, but you put in all the work and all the love in your heart and your family and everything changes, but you still don't have the rights. And so as if you would with your own children. And so that is tough, like, because it's true. Like, we don't have to know all the information. You know, our job is to take care of the children, to love them somewhat, you know, but really like love them, keep them safe, fed, clothed, follow the rules. And that's what your job is. And so that can be hard, because you are loving this child and you're wanting justice to happen and you don't always get it. So,
and if you don't have all the information, your view of what justice is skewed.
Yeah. You have no idea.
You know, because there's so many people also that do get into the foster system for the wrong reasons. And these caseworkers probably learn that they can't trust these people to understand the information. But, you know, so it's just, gosh, where do you even begin?
And I even think there's two sides to like not trusting foster families. And I think where our CPS worker, and I look back, like I said, and I'm like, okay, but I think she instantly thought, we have that rescue complex. We're here. We're going to save this baby. We could love her more than her own family. You know, all these things that she assumed about us. And we did show as far as like, because we did desperately love this child. I think that there's foster families out there like that. We're going to come in and we're going to get what we want. And we're going to, you know what I mean? Like, we're going to save these children and rules don't apply to us. And yada, and they don't like that, which I obviously, and then what Eric said, you have the foster families out there who do it for the wrong reasons, don't tend to care for the children, and you know,
it's a paycheck.
They want, you know, the extra money the state gives, and that's it. So I believe there are two like totally opposite sides, but both are not right. And I think, you know, CPS, unfortunately, they have to kind of,
yeah,
they are stuck in there, like trying to figure that out. But
so here you guys are. At some point, you ultimately lose Eliza.
Right.
And so I know that was really hard for both of you guys. Can you just talk a little bit about what that was like as you think back, what that did to you guys emotionally as your family? And even you talk about the extended family at that point, because how long had you had her and when she left?
So we got her in January.
Yeah, we had her. We had her for a year.
Almost a year.
Shy of a month of a year, you know, when we got her.
We knew. So again, we get to like June or so. So we had her about 6 months. And that was when their first court case was. That's when we found out about the family in New Jersey, because they just showed up at court.
About 6 months.
What was it? That was like later. Like, oh no, that was in September.
Yeah, it was in
September. So they show up at court. They drove from New Jersey because, again, the person in the middle had been feeding them information and feeding us different information. So we show up in court and the judge gets blindsided. They had lied to him. Everyone's blindsided. These people show up and they are pissed.
They hate us.
They hate us because we're trying to steal their family. I mean, we're like, what? I mean, you know, so we get...
Totally.
And so, and the judge can't see what all's going on. So the judge literally is like, well, since they're in town, could you guys like meet up, let them meet her? And I'm all like, these people are going to kill us. Like you don't understand. Like they've literally said incredibly threatening things to me. And again, looking back, they're not bad people. They were fed different information than us. And we were, and it was like, yeah. This lady just did the wrong thing. And so really our CPS worker became an unbelievably out of line, power hungry bully, especially to Glenna, because Glenna's just a kind, follow the rules, go the extra mile person. And so she really made it incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
To put, that is the grossest understatement of the world. Glenna really went through, I mean, bad. Just major depression, anxiety, panic attacks, things like that. Didn't get out of bed for days at times. Like there was times where I would have to work at night because I needed to be with her during the day and her mom would have to be with her. Like she would come relieve me. I would go then get my work done. I mean, it was over a month of that. And I think that whenever we finally got to the point of, we are going to lose her for sure. That maybe helped a little,
Yeah, I remember. I mean, I don't know if you remember. Like, I remember it so clearly. I was in the emergency room, and because I was really, really sick, and I had never, ever experienced anything like that in my body, and so I mean, I could not function, and so. We went to the emergency room. I think we went twice to the emergency room, but this was the first time. And so I'll never forget, like I hadn't eaten in days, like literally, because I couldn't. And Eric was, I mean, he told me in that moment, he was like, we're going to lose her, Glenna, and we've got to just, you know, change how we're thinking. And we had intervened for her as far as like we got a lawyer, and I think just all of that too was a lot of stress and pressure, and I was holding on so tight. And when you said that, I felt this, it's a weird kind of juxtaposition of like I'm incredibly sad, but also like I felt like this peace, maybe for the first time in like months, that I was like, because I realized like I'm not going to be able to keep, you know what I mean? Like keep fighting and like you know, I was just stressed to every call that Sheree would make. I would fear, you know, so it was like, I knew all that was going to be done because she's going to be happy now that we're done with it. You know what I mean? And so I remember we got in the car after I left the emergency room and I was like, let's go to McDonald's. Like, like I had a cheeseburger and I hadn't had that in like, I mean,
you hadn't eaten in days.
I hadn't eaten in days, but I was like, because I physically couldn't eat because everything came back up. Like I had this crazy, like pain in my body. That was all, you know, mental and emotional, but physical as well. And so I felt that peace, like, okay. Like, it was weird. It was still sad, but.
Yeah, it didn't get less sad. It just got some finality. Mm-hmm. So that was probably late October, early November, because that would have been like court was mid-September. And so it was like a month and a half of just her being really sick. Us just kind of going, oh, crud. I mean, like just a mental break and all that time, you know. And so, and then from there, starting to try to like help her make that transition. So we would have to put Eliza on a plane with this caseworker to fly to New Jersey to go see that family. And you just handed her off and then she come back and then she's back in your home again. And then, so it's just like, it's like losing someone slowly, but not to cancer, not to sudden death, just to like a planned loss. It was weird.
Really weird. So, and I know that people can't understand because it's like, well, you only had her for a year, you know? But it just imagine if it was, you know, your own biological child. And also, like we said, Eric and I said from the beginning, if we knew that this was going on, like family was there to want her. And I mean, the family, every time in the court case, like there'd be like a new charge that we would find out about, like a domestic violence. You know, there was just like this constant fear is all I can explain. I felt fear for this child and you can't do anything about it. And so, but if we had known more, I think like Eric said, like it would still have been incredibly sad, but we also had this, I had this fear of what would happen to this child and you just can't do anything about it. And it was the weirdest feeling. I mean, I truly had to surrender to God. And now I understand surrender a whole lot more, you know, and it's in a different way. Because I do, like Eric said, I do look back. I do believe like family reunification is wonderful. I do believe CPS is doing the best they can. I believe it's a weird, I had a friend one time just tell me, just look at foster care. It's just weird. She actually goes to our church. She's like, it's just weird. It's, you know, like it's off. Like it doesn't make sense. Like this isn't the way it should be, you know? And I was like, oh, that was great advice. Cause it is like, I was just, but I still was just fighting so much of that. I didn't let any of those, like I didn't let any of those nuggets of like truth and wisdom, like really, I didn't really believe it, if that makes any sense. And so no matter what, like losing a child is hard, even if it's not your own biological child, because especially we had her the first year of life. So we raised her, she talked, she crawled, she ate her first food, and like all those things she did with us. And which you kind of remember, like our children are like, you know, our bio kids are like 8. And those are the things I still remember most in between those gaps of like, you know, 3 to 8, you know, but you remember that first year of life. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so that was, you know, it was really hard, but I remember feeling loss, but I also felt fear. And it was just odd because you're just, you know, that you're sending a child to another family that is totally different than you.
Yeah.
So ultimately you guys put her on a plane. She heads to New Jersey. And so where did that leave you guys in regards to your foster adopt story? I mean, was it at that point, was it like, we're done? This is like, I can't go through this again. This isn't going to be a part of our story.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And we were like, we tried.
Yeah. We tried. And we also, like at that point, there was a little moment after with the aunt, the great aunt, who we do really, really, she's we awesome. Really liked her.
Yeah.
Because like I said, it was, there was lots of things, lots of odd lies going on between, and which isn't always normal. And so in a foster care case, we really are the rare case. Like our friend Scott, who leads all the classes to get people licensed, he shares our story as like, this is the worst case scenario. Like, this doesn't really happen often. And I mean, so there was this little moment with like the aunt where I'm like, okay, like, this is going to be good. And now what we wanted was like, we can maybe have a relationship with the aunt and Eliza, and we can share like, okay, this is what she does. And oh yeah, this is what she does at night, you know, like, oh, mm-hmm. and this is the food she likes. So we could just help. So we were like, well, that's going to be our role now. This is what we'll do in this system. Although I didn't want pictures of her. You can ask Eric, like my phone would like go off and I was like, I think it's a picture of Eliza. My heart can't handle it. Yeah. Like, you have to look at it.
I'm like, oh yeah, cause I'm stable.
Yeah, I was like, I can't look. I don't want to see
her. That's what everyone knows of me. I'm stable.
Yeah. I was like, I don't, but so yeah, I was so. Just, I physically and emotionally was so sick. Like when you talk about anxiety and depression, like if people have ever really gone through it, it was really, really, really debilitating and scary. And I was not Glenna anymore. And I've been forever changed.
Yeah.
But did that get worse after she actually left, or was that really worse leading up to that?
No, it was worse while leading up to it. But I was changed.
Yeah.
Well, think about when our house flooded. It's like, so like your house floods and your house is never like that again. You rebuild it and it's still your house, but it's never going to be the way it was. And that's like you physically, emotionally, mm-hmm. spiritually, mm-hmm. were completely changed from that for life.
Physically, not the best, but spiritually really good.
Yeah.
Like physically, definitely needs some medicine. Drugs. Yeah. But yeah, so I was like, I've got to heal. I miss a year of my kid's life. I miss Jasper pretty much because he was also sick. So, I mean, we had surgeries and all kinds of things during this time too. So then that was emotionally hard, but I was very focused on the case and Eliza and this worker. So I knew I needed to like get healthy. And also, I think everybody in our life was like, don't y'all ever do this again.
Yeah. Well, that was a whole other part of it. Yeah. So we at some point, like months later, were kind of like, you were the first one. I was like, I'm done. Like, Jesus, right. Punched my card. I tried. We almost wrecked our family. Glenna, like 3 months later, you're like, I think we just need to, like, I'm like, shut up. Like, you're stupid. Like, we're not doing that again. Because also for me, I'm trying to defend our family. And she's like, but we're called. I'm like, no, we're not. Like, we're not, we're really not. And so
I'm going to do things differently, I promise.
Yeah, I'm like, no, you're not. I've known you for a long time. So
we did
probably
respite.
3-4 months later, we kind of did respite because we're still licensed. So we did respite care for some people. And
cried,
again, I'm like,
cried every time they left.
And I didn't. And I was all like, thank God they're gone. I mean, and I was just like, I'm good. Cause like I had really closed that door, I think, big time. So probably 6 months later, I kind of acquiesced to like, okay, we're going to just, we'll put our name back out there because we still felt like we're called to do this, you know?
So Eric, some time has passed and you think, okay, hey, we're going to put our name back in the hat. What did that look like? How did you get to that point knowing all you've been through and what you just said, like, I'm done? How did that change? What happened?
It was a big faith thing because I mean, truly I really was done. I was like, gosh, I mean, like we did it. We've been through it. Like, it's like we did a tour of duty and we made it out. We're not going back, you know? And, but Glenna had just, I was trying to decipher, okay, does she have this burn that she needs to do this to make up for the fact that we kind of failed the first time? Or is it a legitimate, like, she has a calling, we have a calling, and I'm living in defensive world, but she's truly being sensitive to what the Holy Spirit's doing in our family. And really it was, that's what it was. Many times since then, I'm still questioning that, but, and so I was like, so I was apprehensive, but at the same time I was like, okay, we're going to do it. And so the steps to get there though, we were legally, we were still fine to do it. Like we were licensed and all this kind of stuff. But we had to get, we approached it completely differently this time. And we were kind of like,
how so? Like what was different about it?
You can say, you can always say no to a placement. They can't just come drop a kid off at your house. You have to, they can't, you know, legally, they can't just come leave a kid at your house just because you're licensed. Yeah. But they're very persuasive. Yeah. But we were like, okay, we are only going to take one kid. We're no sibling groups. We're going to only take a kid that is in adoptive, like in a ready for an adoptive placement. So we're not going to take a questionable case that we could get stuck in the same situation again, you know?
Yeah, because I do know that. Like, I could foster down the road again another day, like when I get older, maybe. Eric's like, no.
This is after I'm dead.
No, we will be fostering babies one day down the road, babe. But
we'll talk later.
I will. But I knew, though, the place I was in, it with my family and like raising kids, I knew I couldn't lose another child again.
Right. That's a good way of looking at it.
It was like that. Like, I knew, okay, like, this is why I wanted to choose the. Okay, we need to do an adoption placement. Not that there's anything wrong with just fostering, because that's beautiful and amazing. But I knew where we were at a place. It's like, okay, we only need to take an adoptive placement.
Yeah. And we were like, okay, younger, definitely younger than our youngest. You know, we kind of set out all these things. And so then, because Eliza left in December, this is probably April, we get down the wire. Is that April? Somewhere in there. We get this thing. And then she's like, oh my gosh, look at these two boys. I'm like, okay,
so
what did we say? You know, so they were going to be an adopted placement.
Like driving and I'm like, click,
yeah. Click. I know. So, and I'm like, well, babe, we said no sibling groups. Yeah. We said no one older than our youngest kid, you know, but it just felt like it was probably the right thing to, because you put your name in the hat. It doesn't mean you're going to get them.
Right.
You know, so
even when you say yes to that email, doesn't mean you're getting them.
Yeah. So in my mind, I'm like, we're not going to get them. But so, especially because we already had four kids, I'm like, they're not going to give us two more kids. That's insane. And so I kind of throw our name. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. And so then we get, they'll pare it down to three families. And then at this thing called a RAS, they choose one family. Well, they choose us. And I'm like, oh my gosh. What are we going to do? You know, so, cause again, we're kind of doing all this. We haven't really looped our family in back into this.
No, yeah.
And they walked with us through that.
Yeah.
Don't ever do this again.
Yeah. Well, and they didn't literally say it, but I mean, they went through it too. Think,
yeah. They were broken heart. I
they
mean,
were broken heart.
All of them were so sad. So we're
like at this point, both my mom and her mom are both retiring. I had just come to Clear Creek. So I'm like literally within the week that this thing. And so like Glenna's like, we're going to say yes. And I'm like, we're not. We said no. And that was like not good with us. You know, I think you were like, I trust you, but.
I do. I trusted you. I just felt really bad.
Yeah, like, she felt bad. I'm like, well, this is our life. Like, these I don't were feel our, bad.
Like I instantly, of course, felt like we were their mom and dad and we just said no to them. Like that's how I felt. I just felt really guilty and just bad.
So we say no and you were kind of, and like, I don't know. And like, I still to this day, I never had a moment where I felt like yes was the right answer then. And, because that was the other thing. What was like my cop out on the on saying no was that we had gotten some information from CPS or from a CASA worker that things were going weird in New Jersey. And so that really did factor
it
did. In.
They would send me, the CASA worker would send me texts like, have you heard from the family? Like things aren't going so well. Like, you know, and so then it would be in the back of my mind, like what's going on?
We can't start this process with another group, two boys, if Eliza might be out there still, you know? And so that was kind of like the nail in the coffin, the final, like, okay, we're going to say no. So we say no. Nothing comes of New Jersey.
Yeah.
Nothing. Like, everything's fine. Everything's so fine. Now, well, now we didn't get the Du Bois. Now we didn't get Eliza back. You know, because that was like pipe dream anyway. And, so we're kind of like, what are we going to do? So we're kind of just still in that limbo state. And then probably 3 months later, and like end of August or so, they come back and they're like, look, no one is taking these boys. And of course, then I'm all like, well, what's a red flag on that? But no, it wasn't anything. It was just once they got put into that adoptive placement, it's a totally different pipeline that takes way longer. And so they came back to us in August, yeah, and we were like,
I mean, they broadcasted the boys in all of America too. Like you do like state or maybe area, hair, you know, state. And then like when they still can't, they did it for all like the, you know, the US, and still like it was just really hard to get.
So
them.
You heard that they were still available. And I mean, how did you respond to that?
Yeah, well, I emailed Scott when he emailed me, and he's like, they still, and they emailed me asking like, hey, is that one family? Like what's going on, you know, with them? And so I did. I was like, I told Scott, I was like, I think ask them if they will have us. Like,
he's all like, let me check. You know, yes, they will.
If they will have us, I think Eric and I are in a place like we, because I couldn't, I would just like close my eyes and still see their pictures. And I would see their faces for months and months. Like those were our boys. Like those were our boys. And I couldn't stop thinking about them, even though it was hard and it was scary. I could not stop thinking about them. And so I do the right thing. I go to Eric with the final decision. Like, so I was like, okay, Eric, like
we're assuming me and Jesus have a conference room to talk about it.
You know, this is what's going on. And these little boys still need a home. You have to make the decision.
And I just ultimately had a piece about it. I was like,
did.
I think we're going to say yes.
Like, let's just say yes.
I was like, let's just say yes.
And our family was not happy.
No.
And
it was, that was a whole nother new thing. It's like our parents and people around us were like, y'all are nuts. Do not do this. And
we went to we went to counseling with all of our extended family to like work through this. Like, you know, because I wanted to do the right thing by them. And so I was like, why don't we go to counseling? You guys talk, share. We will talk and share. We have a mediator, you know, someone to help through this. And that was
we respect them a lot.
That was good though. That helped them a lot. I would definitely always say to go to counseling through this time and decision.
With your extended family or the people that are kind of involved. Yes. Your village.
Your village. That's a good way to put it. It's your village because it does affect them.
It is their life too. Even though it's your family. Everyone's affected by that, for sure.
Well, thank you for listening to part one of Eric and Glenna's story. To find out what happens next, make sure you listen to part two of You Can't Go Back, So Go On. As a reminder, our hope is that this podcast helps us to better connect with the people of Clear Creek and continue the conversation beyond our weekly worship services. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on any of our weekly episodes. And if you haven't already, go to clearcreekresources.org where you can check out more articles, videos, books, and sermons. Again, I'm Ted Ruskuski, and thank you for listening.